The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder why Christians always have to be so stuffy and so judgmental when a good, harmless, fun movie like Avatar comes out. Actually, many Christians loved this movie. They loved it, and many did not. They're very split on the subject. We'll be discussing Avatar and other recent theatrical or Blu-ray releases on the program that explores Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. I hope you all had a wonderful holiday. Welcome to the first Bob Siegel Show of 2010 and the beginning of our sixth season of the Bob Siegel Show. Can you believe I've been doing this drivel now for 5 whole years? Actually, a lot of stuff was happening on my program during the end of 2009, including some fascinating questions and blog discussions from atheists. I will continue that provocative discussion next week. But for today, I thought it would be fun to kick off the new year with my good friend and film critic, Mark Boobian, certainly no stranger to our program. Mark, Happy New Year.
Thank you, Bob. And you know what? It's an honor to be here at the beginning of your sixth season. I didn't know it had been so long.
Well, you know, Carl Reiner, when he did the Dick Van Dyke Show, said a show should only be on for 5 years. After that, it loses its quality. But that was a sitcom,
yeah,
not a radio show. So hopefully we're just beginning the quality.
Right. I want to keep coming on and talking about movies, so definitely we're not
so
ending it. Don't
in this
end
case,
it 5 seasons.
My joy is yours.
Yeah. So okay, now, but today, to start the sixth season with a bang, I want to actually disagree with something you had to say on your blog in terms of a film, Princess and the Frog.
I tend to write reviews of movies months before they come out if I want to predict something about the movie.
Yeah, all you have
so
to do
I
is...
I haven't seen the movie, but I made a prediction about the movie.
That's right. So this is about your prediction. Now, you know, typically all you got to do is see the preview and you can predict
well,
the movie
for most
anything.
Well, this was one of those rare
anything.
Cases where the preview didn't show the entire story.
Yeah, and I actually, as you know, and I think it's been mentioned before, I avoid previews like the plague because I don't want to have everything
revealed. You got to go to a movie with Mark. He'll get up and walk out of the room. Me, I watch the preview and then I whine about it. So Mark probably has the better idea here.
That's right. I've actually run out of the theater before.
Isn't
not just walked
how they show the whole story, though?
Yeah.
The movie Enemy Mine, the movie Jagged Edge, that movie where Tom Hanks was on the island. What was that called?
Oh, it's Castaway, yeah.
Yeah, you know, in the preview, it shows him castaway, and then he comes back home to his wife, and
right.
She's found someone else. I'm going, oh, it's a story about somebody who comes home from an island, and the rest of the movie's about adjusting that his wife's married. That was the end of the movie.
That
was the last scene of the movie.
See, and I refused to see it because of that, because I thought, well, they've given everything away. If there's anything interesting, I'm not going to see it in the story. So
when my daughter saw While You Were Sleeping, she came home, and she was about to tell me what it was about. I said, no, I'll tell you. And I told her the whole story. Not that you couldn't predict those things anyway. That's on one hand, a trained chimpanzee could predict them, but on the other hand, they think we're so stupid that they got to show us the whole story anyway. Like, if we don't know the story ahead of time, we're too dumb to decide if we can even go to the stupid movie.
Yeah, right. I know. I mean, it's too bad. It's too bad. Titanic had the longest preview I've ever seen. I think it was like 10 minutes long.
Yeah,
and they gave
really,
away the whole movie.
They gave that away. We saw the ship go down in the previews. I didn't know the Titanic was going to sink.
They're ruining the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then that cheap sequel that they're going to do to Mel Gibson's The Passion. I hear there's one of those cheap sequels where the hero isn't really dead and 3 days
comes
later
back,
he comes
yeah.
back to life. What are they doing with us here?
Yeah, The Resurrection of the Christ.
And yeah, that one, just a cheap sequel.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, but they'll make money any way they can. So, okay, now let's get back to me taking issue with your blog.
You're taking issue. I wrote a blog called The Princess, the Frog, and Bob. That was the name of my blog.
Yeah, now, Bob, since you weren't there, the key line here is, and this is not reaching too far, I wouldn't have thought. You actually say that, you know, you expect the girl would decide to stay a frog at the end of the film.
Which...
she does.
Yes. I did pick up a storybook version in Target.
Yeah.
And turn to the end.
But that's not the end. That's the key. So you think that, but the what's important here, though, is not actually her decision, but the why that you predict is that it's because frogs are equivalent to people. They're every bit as valuable as people. And it's only our own, you know, racist thinking that would
that
make us feel otherwise.
That is what I thought they were going to do. And you're saying that that was not her reason for staying a frog.
Right. As she did decide that she wanted to stay a frog. But there's two things happening. One is they had no choice. They lost their ability to become human. The magic wasn't going to work. Because she, you know, the frog is supposed to kiss a princess to become a man again. But she's dressed as a princess early in the movie, kisses her, and she switches to a frog, so it backfires. That's the sort of the plot point there. But so they're stuck. They because there's no princess to kiss, and so they have to stay frogs. And so it's not like, oh well, we love the environment so much that we're gonna decide to stay frogs. Now the other thing is she had fallen in love with the prince and decided that was better to be with him than without him.
But so wait a minute, Mark. Was she falling in love with him while he was a frog?
Yes.
Well, then obviously there's something that's elevating frogs here.
Yeah, almost. Except,
you know, I love frogs. I had a pet frog when I was a kid.
Well, you know,
this is not Be Unkind to Frogs Week.
Well, I don't love frogs, to be perfectly honest with you. And I think that's one of the keys to the story, that frogs are kind of gross. And that's played out in the movie, too.
Well, you know what? But I know that when you and I watch movies, some lines jump out more at you and some jump out more at me. Now, I will fully admit in front of everybody I haven't seen it. I was right about the fact that she remained a frog. But you're saying I was wrong about the reason. I'll bet you if I saw that movie, though, there'd be some line in there about how frogs are people, too, or something.
No. There's nothing. Not. Absolutely not. And I was very glad about that. That's the key. And
I'm glad about it, too. I'm happy to be wrong about that.
Yeah, that's more important than whether she decided to stay a frog or not, I think, is the reason is more important than, so to me, for the theme of the film, what the film is communicating to children and to adults is the theme. And if she decided to stay a frog because frogs were equal to people, I would say that's a bad theme. That's not a good message. That contradicts anything that I would ever see in Christianity. We are not equated with animals. And they don't make that equation. It's really more of a Beauty and the Beast kind of thing where she falls in love with the guy in spite of his ugliness. So, yes, he was a frog when she falls in love with him, but it's the, you know, Belle in Beauty and the Beast fell in love with the Beast, and he was a big ugly beast. So that's really more of what they were driving at with this movie.
Do I at least get some credit for at least getting the fact that she stayed a frog?
Well, right? No, you don't, because she doesn't stay a frog, actually.
She doesn't stay a frog? At the end of the movie, she's not a frog anymore?
No, because I won't tell you how it works out, because I'll leave that.
All right.
See, but I've given away everything the previews would have.
The storybook version at Target is different from the book.
Oh, maybe it is.
At the end of that version, she was a freaking frog at the end.
Oh, well, maybe the Target guy, the novelist, wanted it to have a different message. Who knows?
Okay. Well, all right. I'll go see it. I'll go see it.
Yeah, it's worth it.
And you know what? I'll leave my review on. I could go on my town hall and just take that off and make it look like I never even put it up. But I don't believe in historical revisionist history. If I was wrong, I'll still leave that blog up there for posterity.
Yeah, and you'll have to print your retraction. Oh my gosh, I can't wait for the day.
Of course, the guy at Avatar made a choice to. I mean, anybody that's going to listen to a show about Avatar has got to know that we're going to talk things away. So
yeah, okay. So certainly, yeah, we're going to give away all of Avatar. Pretty
end,
much.
When they saw the previews for Avatar, where they showed practically everything too, but I knew immediately, oh, he's going to remain an avatar. Jumping Jiminy, imagine that.
Well, so, you know, that was obvious. You know, I didn't have to see the preview to know that from the beginning. Once I understood what the avatar was, I was like, all right, how are they going to work this out? He's got to stay an avatar. How's that going to work out? And that was the only thing. I was like, oh, okay, so there's this invention in the middle of the movie that allows him to become permanently the avatar body. You know, his soul and mind are connected to the
body.
And,
of course, in Shrek, the part that Cameron Diaz played, wasn't she, what was it, a goblin? What was
She was an ogre, just like Shrek. Yeah.
And she chose to remain an ogre because ogres are as
good. Well, actually, no, she didn't choose. She loved Shrek. And she kissed him, but she became an ogre.
There was a curse that she was an ogre half the time.
Right.
And there was a curse they were trying to break. And didn't they decide at the end of the movie that, oh, this isn't a curse, this is a blessing?
No, well, the donkey says the line, you know, oh, I was hoping it would work out this way. But they pull a Beauty. They're making fun of Disney movies throughout all of Shrek. And so they pull a Beauty and the Beast moment.
It's true. With Shrek, they were such satire, we could give them a little kudo there.
Right. Now, I will give you some credit about, you know, your prediction about Princess and the Frog is not out of line from what Disney has done in the past. I think during the summer we talked about the movie Up, where they killed the main character, the human, but they spared the lives of the animals, and the human was killed the same way by falling. He fell without a parachute. The animals had a parachute. No comment about the human's death. We had a kind of a little bit of a laugh about the animals not dying. So there's this setup that the human being is less valuable than the animals. And I was disappointed with Up for that reason and didn't see it. Worse, though, is Brother Bear. I think this is the worst Disney-themed film ever. He chooses to stay a bear at the end of Brother Bear. This is not a big revelation. It's an old movie now. And it is because, exactly as you predicted, they're equating humans with animals. That is the point of the film. And if you don't get the point from the story, there's a song where Phil Collins sings, "We Are All the Same." That is the point of that movie, and I think that is a terrible theme to leave with, because humans and animals are not equivalent. We are different. That is what the Bible teaches. That is what we all actually act like. Humans and animals are different. You're not put on trial for murdering an animal.
Well, you know, even the animal rights activists, they kind of betray themselves. Like Peter will say that animal life is equivalent to human. Well, if that's true, then why will they hold humans accountable for hunting animals, but they won't hold animals accountable for hunting animals? They'll say,
correct,
oh, well, they have an instinct. That's that they're predatory. And their Freudian slips reveal that they really do see humans and animals as different. Of course they do.
Right. And the same exact thing plays out in Brother Bear. They eat the salmon. Well, then, but, you have to equate the salmon's not equivalent to the bear.
Well, I heard dolphins actually go out and rape other dolphins. I mean, no offense to those of you who love SeaWorld.
Wow, I've never heard that before. That's pretty gnarly. I'm going to watch it next time I'm surfing.
Well,
okay.
What a great way to kick off season 6 of the Bob Siegel Show with facts like that.
Yeah, I think we better move into Avatar as quick as we can. You know, even the president has seen Avatar. That was big news.
Oh,
that's,
you know,
how big
what?
This
now,
movie
I didn't
is.
Write this, but I made this prediction to my girlfriend. I said, I bet you Obama will make some positive comment about Avatar. Has he?
I don't know. He just saw it. They had it in the news. He went to Avatar with his kids and came out and waved at people.
Okay,
and so,
well, it is unavoidable. It is the big elephant in the room. We are going to review Avatar. More correctly put, Mark will review it. And I wrote a review of Avatar that Mark hasn't read. So you'll hear me respond here and there to his review when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
The sound. You're more beautiful.
Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Siegel with film critic Mark Booby. And I know there's a great deal of news to cover, even though we're doing movie reviews today. I will be going through the relevant news of the day tomorrow night when I substitute host, as I often do, for Rick Amato. Once again, that's tomorrow night, Monday, January 4th, same station, KCBQ 1170 from 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock p.m. You can also follow my news commentary through my daily blog on Town Hall, bobsiegel.townhall.com, or check out now my regular contributions for San Diego Newsroom and San Diego Rostra. Speaking of San Diego Rostra, I wrote an article not long ago about Sarah Palin, which caught the interest of KUSI News in San Diego. Tomorrow morning at 7:20 a.m., you can watch my live interview. Yes, that's a.m. I tend to be more of a night person myself. As for morning, I've heard of such things. I'm not an entire skeptic. I'm willing to hang around and see if morning really exists. That's KUSI Channel 9 on Cox Cable or whatever that channel is through your cable or satellite provider. And Mark, welcome back to our program.
Thanks, Bob. Well, we were talking about Avatar. We were starting to talk about Avatar. The president has seen it, so you should see it too. Anybody out there listening, go see this movie. It is good, a very good movie. Visually, it is the most astounding film I have ever seen.
And I did see the film, but I don't know if my life is based on doing what the president
does. Oh, come on.
I don't know if his seeing it would have necessarily been an argument for me to see it. Fortunately, I saw it before I found out that he saw it.
Well, he saw it in Hawaii, so maybe the argument should be that you go to Hawaii and see it. That would be a good way to go ahead.
I'd be willing to even imitate the president if I could go to Hawaii. I'd do anything to go to Hawaii.
There you go. See? So you should follow in his footsteps. All right. So, well, regardless of your feelings about following the president's footsteps, I still think everybody should see this movie because of the visual aspect to it, and it should be seen in 3D. This is not the first 3D movie out. The last couple of years have seen the newest resurgence of 3D in the theater. I think this is the third time it's occurred. Both past times, it's been a complete and total failure, and for good reason, because it was bad. And it pretty much constituted the movies throwing stuff at you and trying to scare you by, you know, jabbing stuff at you from behind the screen, like spears and knives and whatever.
Wouldn't you say that Beowulf was one of the first good? That was the first 3D that I really liked and thought the 3D was spectacular.
Yeah, preceding that for me was actually Meet the Robinsons. And that was the one that was the proof of concept for me. And that was about 4 months before Beowulf. But yeah, any of the modern stuff now is very good, except with the exception of a couple of horror movies, and Journey to the Center of the Earth was a throw stuff at you kind of 3D movie.
Well, since it had Will Ferrell in it, it was a successful horror movie for that reason.
Actually,
alone.
That's Land of the Lost. Journey to the Center of the Earth was Brendan Fraser.
Oh, you're right. You're right. I didn't care for that one much either, though. But yeah, at least it didn't have Will Ferrell in it.
That's right. It's good enough reason to see it for me. So, but what they're doing now is the idea is that the 3D is like you're looking through a window into a world behind the screen, so that you get a sense of depth that goes into the screen. And it works very, very well when they do it this way. And Avatar works very well in this regard. Now, Cameron's been working on the film proper for about 4 years, developing the technology for the 3D stuff, but there's a lot of animated films. Bob, you already mentioned Beowulf. I talked about Meet the Robinsons. Probably the best example of 3D that I've ever seen so far is not Avatar, but Monsters versus Aliens, which was the 3D was absolutely astounding in that film. Now, Avatar is the second best, and Monsters versus Aliens has gone out of the theater. So this is your chance to really see something amazing in 3D. Now, even without the 3D, though, the world that Cameron has built, this planet called Pandora, is beautiful. It's beautiful. No matter what your feelings are about the theme, the story, the characters, the world is beautiful. I have not heard a single person say otherwise. He is very meticulous, and he has an attention to detail like no other, and it really pays off well in this movie. The visual elements are just so astoundingly detailed, and you know, he's not subtle in anything he does. And again, that really pays off here. Now, the story is not really complicated. It's, you know, about a guy that goes to this other world and he has to save the other world, becomes one of the natives, and then
I think when we talked about this, we both had the same thought in the movie theater. To me, it was a glorified sci-fi fantasy version of Dances with Wolves.
Now, correct.
I liked Dances with Wolves.
Yeah.
But it's not quite the original story people are making it out to be. It is kind of a recycled Dances
Yeah, it is. And I've heard a lot of the critics have said that. It's no Terminator. Terminator was, ironically, Terminator was not an original idea. He was sued by a science fiction writer named Harlan Ellison.
Wonderful science fiction writer.
Yes, and so there's a credit now at the end of the movie Terminator that says acknowledgement to Harlan Ellison. However, when it showed in the theaters, a lot of people like myself had never seen anything like it, and it was a great original story. So it's not like that. It's not going to be one of those types of, wow, this is such an astounding story. Now, the thing I thought that was very original was the concept of the Avatar. Now, for me, science fiction movies, the concepts in science fiction movies win me over a lot, just like story does. I mean, you have to have both.
But it was interesting, and maybe you could explain to the audience what is the concept of the Avatar.
Okay, well, you know, I went in not knowing, so this is where not seeing the previews really paid off for me, because this was the one big thing for me in the movie that was a surprise. The Avatar is a biological copy that's on this planet. The human beings cannot breathe the air or live in the environment unaccompanied by a suit or a mask, so they can't interact with the natives directly. So they develop this other body that's a copy. They take the human DNA, mix it with the native DNA, and then they create this being. And then there's a machine that connects your mind to the mind of this body, this living organism, and you become that body. And so it's a really unique concept in that your mind is controlling a remote person, and it's a real biological being. So I just found the concept really neat. Now, interestingly enough, I had seen this in another movie, though not a science fiction movie exactly. It was in Being John Malkovich, where they go into Malkovich's head and control him.
That was one of the most original movies I had ever seen.
That's right.
Being John Malkovich.
So, I don't think anybody's going to accuse James Cameron of stealing the idea from the author of Being John Malkovich, but, you know, maybe he did. You never know. So, but anyway, so I really like this concept. I like the idea, and I like the way it worked. And as I had mentioned prior to the break, for me, the conflict, how is he going to stay in the Avatar body? So even though the idea was neat, I knew where the story was going until the very last moment. I knew what was coming. So
when they tried unsuccessfully to completely transform Sigourney Weaver.
Correct.
That's where we knew that. That's now. And I'll agree. Now, you should all know. So far, I agree with Mark. The movie, The Land of Pandora, was beautiful. The Avatar concept itself was creative. There's a lot of other stuff that goes with this movie, though, and we'll continue talking about Avatar when we return. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480539, W&S Electric.
Oh,
Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Siegel and Mark Boubian, and we are discussing Avatar, a movie that's been very big on the hearts, the minds, the discussions around the water cooler these last couple of weeks since it's been out.
Yes, and around the world too, because it's raking in the bucks. This is the first movie I think that may actually beat Titanic. Now, who was the guy that did Titanic? It's James Cameron, the same guy that did Avatar. He is like pure gold to Hollywood, I swear. Avatar is actually halfway to making the same amount as Titanic in domestically, two-thirds of the way internationally.
And I think undoubtedly this thing will sweep the Oscars. The only hesitation would be they tend to want to put animation in a category by itself, but this is not just animation this time. It's too mixed with
the real world. Right,
and it's James Cameron. I have a feeling it will be at least nominated Best Picture of the Year. Whether it'll win, I don't know. I believe it'll be nominated.
It for sure will be nominated because they're going to have 10 Best Picture nominations this year. So they're doing something very different than they have in the past.
Are you kidding me? The Academy Awards is nominating 10?
10, yeah. Because they
thought that was a better... You know, they did that years ago. If you go back to the 20s and 30s, they had more than five. Which I always like what the Golden Globes do, where they nominate according to category: best comedy, best musical, best drama.
I think that's a better way to do it.
Yeah, but I did not know that 10 nominations. Wow!
Because they really want to draw in people into the they want viewers for the show.
Is it the economy? Basically. Are movies not doing as well this year?
This is the best year for movies in history.
The way it seemed to me. So why are they suddenly changing the standard?
It's because they want people to watch the show, the Academy Awards. The actual show has not been getting good ratings.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the primary motivators, which is kind of funny. You know, they're like, let's go watch Hollywood pat each other on the back. I'm really motivated to see that. I mean, you know.
But Mark,
great.
The biggest criticism people had of the Academy Awards is they went on too long. So they're going to fix that by nominating 10 movies?
Right. They'll just skip right to Best Picture at the beginning of the show, and all 2 hours will be about Best Picture.
Well, I don't mind 10 movies. Just cut down the speeches. Right. When Alfred Hitchcock won, I don't remember what he won for. He walked up, leaned into the microphone, and he went, "Thank you." And then he sat down.
Yeah.
It was the best acceptance speech I ever heard.
Yeah, right. Well, he was the best at doing trailers, too. So, you know, there was something to Mr.
Hitchcock.
You
could watch one of his trailers. You'd be dying to see the movie. You'd have no idea what it was about.
Yeah, he was great. Well, okay, so Avatar, though, probably will win some Academy Awards. It will certainly be nominated for Best Picture, you know. And I'm not too disappointed. I actually don't think it'll win Best Picture because the story just isn't strong enough to hold that up. But the political message is there, Bob. You actually have seen us.
Hollywood will love its political messages.
Now, we disagree. I didn't see the same message politically as you did, which is interesting to me. You saw something about the Iraq war.
Would you like me to mention
that
now?
Yeah, go for it.
Well, okay. First of all, a lot of Christians are concerned about this movie. Some of them love it. I do want to say that what's concerning most Christians is not concerning me.
Right.
Some of them are concerned because there's almost partial nudity amongst the aliens of Pandora. For myself, a blue half woman, half animal tailed creature doesn't do a whole lot to turn me on. So I think people are exaggerating this nudity thing. And then, of course, the people of Pandora have the religion, very New Age, even more reminiscent, very pantheistic. But even beyond that, some of the worshiping of female deities that characterizes Wicca, specifically characterizes some of the religions that God strictly forbid in the Old Testament. But then the Bible forbids any religion that doesn't serve the one true God. And at the end of the day, I don't expect a director to have perfect theology. And the religion is supposed to be a fictitious religion invented just for this story. So even though it will remind you of other religions, that didn't bother me as much. The political stuff, though, you can't miss it. If James Cameron wanted to say that he wasn't talking about the war in Iraq, I don't know how he would say it with a straight face. They had the term shock and awe. They had the phrase, "We will fight terror with terror." Now, look, we can have different views about the Iraq war. Some people believe that there were weapons of mass destruction. Some people don't. But never did we get together as a country and say, "Oh, there are terrorists. Let us be terrorists, too." If you disagree with somebody's position, don't try to read their mind and their motives. We believe we were stopping evil with justice. Some people don't believe that's what we did. That's what we believe. We did not get together and go, "Oh, well, they're terrorists. We'll be terrorists." And of course, in this movie, the Americans, and they don't call them Americans, but they call them Marines, and it's pretty obvious that it's America that they're talking about. They're the bad guys, except for a few repentant soldiers, obviously.
Correct.
They are, and in this movie, of course, they are the bad guys because they're out there pillaging this peaceful, lovable people. Well, if in Iraq we had been pillaging a peaceful, lovable people, that would have made us bad guys. We went into Iraq to remove a dictator who grinded people through meat shredders if they disagree with them. His sons went out and caught women on their wedding day and took them to rape rooms. The day that man fell, the people of Iraq celebrated by knocking over his statue. It looked like the end of Return of the Jedi when they were knocking over the statue of Emperor Palpatine. But the main thing is, in this movie, we're there because there's this rare mineral, this rare metal that we want. Was clearly a description of us going into the Middle East for oil. Now, I'm not saying we haven't had interest in oil in the Middle East. After 9/11, that was not our interest in the Middle East. In the current Iraqi war, if we were there for oil, I have just one question. Where the heck is the stuff? The way our economy's doing, we could use it. Not one barrel of oil was ever shipped to the United States. We could have said, we liberated your country. We'd like you to chip in and pay for it. We didn't do that. The oil money is all going to rebuild Iraq. And so it's saying things about America that are simply not true. And it's saying it to a generation of people who believe, and this is true, many people that are teens and college students believe that when they're watching The Daily Show, they're hearing real news. I mean, they understand it's a satire. Yes, of course. They understand it's funny. But they get their news from The Daily Show, and they don't watch anything else. It's also a generation that likes high-tech things. I'm a little bit concerned. Abraham Lincoln once predicted that if our country ever fell, it would not be from an enemy from without conquering us, that we would crumble from within. And teaching people to dislike their country, that's very dangerous. If we were a country worth being disliked, it wouldn't be dangerous. If we were the Nazis, we should teach people to dislike us. That's not the country that we're living in. And here's the thing, Mark. They were, and then I'll shut up after this because I want to give you a chance to respond. There were all kinds of wars that were made about the war in Iraq, from Lions to Lambs to Valley of Elah. They all went belly up at the box office. They were their own weapons of mass destruction. They bombed. This is really the first successful anti-Iraq war movie. And that's where I am with where this thing was. The political stuff concerned me much more than the religious. And I'm saying that as a minister.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, that's very interesting, Bob. Now, see, I was one person who didn't view it that way because I keyed in on something completely different politically.
And hopefully other people will key in on different things and then that'll be fine. But I do believe he had an agenda.
Yeah, of course, as any director would.
Okay. Well, we'll let Mark respond to, we had Mark's review, my response, Mark's response to my response when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
How many times have you heard the phrase, they're all the same, applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, when people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt. For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
I'd like to remind all of my listeners that The Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. Every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear City Voice. On this provocative program, my good friend George Runyon interviews a different local Christian ministry every week. You can listen to the show while driving to church, and don't be surprised, you may find it so interesting that you'll stay in the parking lot continuing to listen and skipping those Sunday school donuts. That's City Voice with George Runyon, every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30 on our sister station, KPRZ 1210. But right now, you're listening to KCBQ 1170. Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Siegel and Mark Boubian. We're talking about Avatar, a brilliant movie in its execution and its special effects and its beauty, even a well-written story, which we agree upon. But Mark and I, morally, ethically, in terms of symbolism, we were seeing different things in this
movie. A little bit, yeah. In terms of the politics, I think that I look at this movie at three different levels. There's the political, environmental, and spiritual aspect. The political things that I saw were actually more keyed in towards the way we treated the American Indian during the Old West, where and the Na'vi, the people on Pandora, the planet, were they had a very deep respect, and they lived very comfortably with the environment that they were in. They didn't like overfish, overhunt, or anything like that. That, you know, the white man is famous for.
And I would be much more sympathetic if I thought that that was the analogy he was trying to make.
Yeah, and I see what you're saying, but there, I'm not sure about the Iraq thing. I'll see the movie again and then have to rethink that aspect. But I still do think he was really keying in on that. There's some conversations that we hear during the movie that sound very much like the things that we heard in Dances with Wolves. There's the whole bow and arrow versus the gun kind of thing. And then the one of the things that for me was that they referred to animals and plants as brother. Now, that's I have a friend who's a Native American here in California, and he told me that that is one of the beliefs that they have, that they are brothers spiritually with things in the world. Now, that doesn't mean they worship those things or equate them with humans. It's just that that is showing a tight relationship bond. Now, Bob, I would call you a brother in Christ. That doesn't mean you are my blood brother. It just shows a connection between us that is deeper than just being friends or being enemies, per se.
It doesn't mean I'm a turnip.
Exactly. So the term brother doesn't necessarily imply worship or exact equation, but that's one of the terms they use, and that's a common Native American term for their relationship with the world. And then the mineral that you mentioned, now during the 1800s, I believe, we drove the, I'm not sure if it was the Lakota Sioux, out of the Black Hills when gold was discovered. They were completely driven out and into what's called the Badlands. They were given the Badlands as their place to live after we found gold in the Black Hills. Now you can imagine what the Badlands were like versus the Black Hills, which were very nice and full of trees.
They're probably called Badlands for nothing.
For nothing, yeah, exactly. So anyway, that's where the connection I saw politically.
Well, now, and the thing is, I do think our country, as far as the way we treated the Native Americans, slavery, we have a lot of stains in our history, to be sure. But
sure,
it is interesting that you always have to go back about 100 years to find it. I would like to see the fact that we've moved on. We've atoned for a lot of this. I mean, there's been a lot of repentance on the part of our nation, too. So, I mean, I am much more sympathetic with the whole Native American theme in this that you're looking at. But again, even that, I don't know that I'd want to see that portrayed as if it's something we're still doing, because we're not still
right.
doing
yeah,
that.
Right, yeah, and you wouldn't, certainly not. I certainly wouldn't. And if we were doing that, I'd certainly like to know.
And if we
so
were
we
doing
could stop it,
it would
yeah.
be wrong, and it would be evil, and making a movie like Avatar would be an act of heroism. To
right,
me.
Exactly. Okay, so, now, in terms of the spiritual element, now, you already mentioned, Bob, that there is some paganistic, pantheistic themes, and I've heard other talk show hosts talk about this and really just get on about it, get really down on Avatar about it. Now, for me, there's always something deeper in almost any movie I see because there are themes that the author, the director, the writer want to introduce, and they're not necessarily what you see on the surface. Now, sure, I will agree that there are pantheistic and paganistic elements to the story. I'm not going to deny that. But I am also going to tell you that there are Christian elements here just as well. And they're not quite as on top of the surface as the pantheistic ideas, but they are there nonetheless. Now, for example, Sigourney Weaver plays a character named Grace Augustine. Grace is an idea, a theological notion in Christianity emphasized by a Christian philosopher named Augustine.
Yes, in fact, Augustine developed a lot of the ideas that Martin Luther later ran with during the Protestant Reformation.
There you go. So why is she called Grace Augustine? Interesting. Well, one of the things is she appreciates the beauty of the planet. She sees it as a wondrous place, an Eden-like place, and it's as though she's viewing God's grace. And she's communicating that to our main character, who is the savior, Jake Sully, who ends up saving the people, okay? The bad guy is named Selfridge. He's the head of the corporation. Selfridge, implying selfish or self-righteous in his ability to take whatever he wants. Again, those are I would say, selfish being connected with sinfulness. He is being sinful in what he is doing. So there are a couple of very direct Christian references, I would say, on the surface. Now, in the storyline, we see our main character named Jake. He is incarnated when he goes into the body of the Avatar.
That's interesting. Now, one of the things I appreciate about you, Mark, is you do find things a lot of times that the rest of us... I never thought about the Avatar body being like an incarnation.
Like
that,
Christ.
That is very, very interesting.
Yeah, now I can't take credit for
that.
Doesn't
mean
I saw
don't
somebody
like
else.
The movie, but it is very, very interesting.
Yeah, and now there's a website called Hollywood Jesus that does reviews, and a preview review written by a guy named David Bruce. He's where I got this idea from, and I'm only repeating it because I saw the same thing. I agreed with him very much after I saw it, so I don't get full credit. I want to make sure credit is where credit's due. But it is like Christ becoming a man. Now, also there's the idea that the human DNA is mixed with the alien DNA, so it's like God and man, another connection to Christianity. Christ was God and man, so there's that duality that we see in the Avatar as well. Immediately upon his arrival on the planet or upon his becoming the Avatar, he gets lost and he's found by the people. And there's a sign from God that he will be the savior. It's very clear that that's what the sign means. And
that's true. There, he's a fulfillment of some kind of prophecy that they had. Okay,
that's right. Yeah.
All right. More Christian symbolism. Some Christians loved this movie. Some hated it. Undeniably, they talked about some religious elements that would not be Christian, but Mark is finding some Christian elements in this movie. Mark, Cameron and I, this is not James Cameron, Cameron here at the radio station, we decided that since you're so good at finding symbolism, you've got to start watching Lost. We're going to insist. We're going to show up at your door and do an intervention. I mean, that program was made for you, Mark. Even I see the symbolism in that program. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com. Welcome back to the last segment of the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with my good friend and film critic, Mark Boobian, and we're discussing Avatar.
Thank you, Bob. And some more Christian elements to the movie. One thing that develops through the film and that we see, and that's similar to Dances with Wolves, is that the main character, Jake, comes to love the people. Again, similar to Christ's love for humanity. It's sort of a reflection of that. Now, if it ended there, that would be fine. Dances with Wolves, you know, he goes off with the people. Here, though, it's that love that changes him from being just a human being committed to betraying them versus saving them. So it's that love that gives him the willingness to sacrifice himself if need be. He actually does not, in this film, sacrifice himself, but he sacrifices everything but his own life.
Well, and he's certainly willing to sacrifice
his life.
Because when he goes to battle, he's aware that he might die.
Yes,
that's absolutely true. And they did kill his real body.
In the end, at the very end, they do. His real body does die, but they don't kill it exactly. Now, before, though, that happens, the Na'vi, the people of the planet, must... he betrays them, and they find out, and they, you know, kick him out. And he has to re-earn their respect, and he has to have them follow him. He's going to become their leader. And they have to follow him unconditionally. That's one of the key things in the film. He knows how the bad guys work, the Marines work. He was a Marine himself. So if they don't give over to him unconditionally, they're not going to be able to win. And so, again, that's similar to Christianity, where we want to unconditionally follow God's lead. Now, another thing is that by following him, he brings spiritual and physical freedom. Now, the physical freedom is pretty obvious. You know, he frees them from the bad guys. Spiritually, though, the bad guys are actually attacking a tree called the Tree of Souls, which holds the souls of all the people that have died in the past. And so there's a spiritual element to this tree, and he protects the tree. It is through him that the tree is saved. So there's this spiritual freeing that occurs. Now, Bob, you just obviously you mentioned his physical body. He doesn't actually die. He comes very close to dying in the movie.
Well, that's right. And they were trying to kill him, and then on the verge of death, they transferred
him. Yeah, they get him back. But then,
that's right.
And then what happens, though, is he leaves his last log and he goes back. And as Sigourney Weaver earlier in the movie, they try to connect her from her human body to the Avatar body. The natives do. And they fail. But for him, they succeed. So they take him, his natural body, his human body dies, and he's transferred soul and mind into the new Avatar body. And again, that's like a death and resurrection scene at the very end of the film. So a lot of these things really reflect Christ and Christianity. Now, what I find interesting about this is, even though there's these paganistic and pantheistic overtones, we still get a very strong sense of Christ driving through the movie, through the undertones of the film. You would think they would totally reject this notion of Christianity if they really wanted to sell us pantheism or paganism. But Christ is such an important part of our spiritual beings.
Do you think he intended Christ, or did he just accidentally put that in there because there are universal truths that are just in us because we're made in the image of God?
I think that he did not necessarily intend all of the things that I'm pointing out, but I think that they come into play not just due to these universal truths. I sort of subscribe to the notion of the hero with 1,000 faces that Joseph Campbell developed. Joseph Campbell's theory for why it developed, I disagree with. I think that because Christ is the true hero, all of our myths reflect that true hero. And here we have any story with a hero is going to reflect Christ in many different ways. And here we have a hero who reflects Christ. So I think that that just works out because spiritually we have this longing for Christ written in all of our hearts, whether we follow him or not. And now I don't have any biblical, you know, foundation for saying that, except that this is what we see throughout history in mythology and in storytelling. So,
well, if we all went back to the original people of the Garden of Eden, then it would make sense that different versions of the stories of the Bible would find their way into other cultures. A lot of times Christianity is accused of stealing mythology from other cultures, but they forget about this little thing called the Old Testament,
right,
which predates most of these myths that they say Christianity. And the Old Testament talked about resurrection, and the Old Testament talked about virgin birth. So those ideas were back even in the Old Testament.
Right, and those were predicting Christ, because God was always driving towards day Christ was born and was ultimately to die for our sins and bring us salvation. So, yeah, I mean, that's why we see that in the Old Testament, but that's a very good example. Now, another element that's sort of controversial is there's a very strong environmental message. Now, I don't think this should be controversial. I think Christians should just, you know, I don't know why Christians aren't the full-on environmentalists. This is something that has always boggled my mind, because the Bible does talk about a strict relationship between humanity and creation. And now in Avatar, we see they have a tail and they connect it to things and they can feel and experience like a tree or a plant or an animal or whatever through this organ on the end of their tail. So there's a direct physical connection. The Bible talks about a spiritual connection that we have between man and creation. It's most notable in Romans 8, approximately 20 through 25. And two things we see in these verses, I'm not going to read them, but creation fell with mankind. It says in Romans, creation had frustration imposed upon it because of man. And it says in Genesis, the Lord God took man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work. Oh, sorry, excuse me. That's the wrong verse. But anyway, we're supposed to take care of the Garden of Eden. He says, cursed be the ground because of you. That's the one I was looking for. That's Genesis 3. So because of man, the environment, the world, the creation is cursed. Not because of what creation did, but because of what a man did. Why would that be if there wasn't some kind of connection between us? So Romans is keying in on that in one part. And then it also says that creation will be redeemed with mankind. It will be brought into the same glorious freedom as the children of God through Christ. So again, there is a relationship that the Bible is discussing between humanity and creation and the environment, the world, whatever you want to call it, but there is a relationship. I'm not saying we should worship the environment. I'm not saying anything like that. That's not what the Bible says.
I think that's the difference I think I would be speaking for a lot of Christians probably, but I'll just speak for myself. The way you're defining environmentalism, I consider myself an environmentalist. And I'm not just saying that. I wrote a blog about that not too long ago, about my annual walk amongst the redwood trees and how important that is for me spiritually. But so often in the name of, I think some wackos have hijacked a lot of the environmental movement, saying that the trees are as important to God as people are. And right now that there's real controversy about whether the world is actually warming or not. People are actually using the word climate change instead of warming now because the world's been cooling. And when it gives the government an excuse to tax us more, I think those are the red flags that people respond to. And it's too bad, because if we didn't have so much garbage, I think people and I think Christians would feel freer to read the Bible. And absolutely, you're pointing to some very appropriate verses. There is something that nature does for us spiritually.
That's right.
We need that. And that's a very important thing to point out.
Right. And the verse I accidentally read instead of the cursive verse, the verse that says that God took us, put us in the garden and told us to work it and take care of it. We are supposed to take care of it. That is our first commission. That's the first thing God tells us to do in Genesis.
And the second one was sex, be fruitful and multiply.
Yeah, right. So there you go. So
who says God's a fuddy-duddy God?
Right, exactly. So, hey, there's two great things that we get told to do. One right after
the
other.
I'm sure he meant within marriage, everybody. Stop clutching your chest. Stop clutching your chest right now.
So, yeah, but again, Avatar is communicating this very similar idea about this. They are showing a physical and spiritual connection between the people and the world. And that is a biblically sound idea. But again, we don't want to go all the way to worshiping or to pantheism. We want to stop before we get there. But that is still a biblically sound idea without those things. And again, as I mentioned before, there's other things that reflect Christ in this movie. So it's a wonderful movie. I highly recommend it.
Okay, I didn't like it as well as Mark did, but again, we saw different things in it. I do find some of the things that Mark saw in it very, very interesting. You'll have to see the movie and decide for yourself. We don't have to be agreement on this program. I will see you tomorrow night on the Rick Amato Show, possibly tomorrow morning on KUSI, but definitely next week at 3:00. This is Bob Siegel. Just making the obvious obvious.
To the Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.